Hello. The following podcast comes with a disclaimer, which probably isn't a good sign, is it? I decided it would be a good idea to sit down with some mates of mine and do a year review. So going month by month, talking about some of the things that went on that month in the news, in music, in our own lives, and record it. We also decided it'd be good to have a drink while we do this. Now, I don't really drink much anymore. I've probably been drunk probably twice this year up to this point. I figured that these episodes would get at least two episodes out of, so at least a couple of hours. We ended up drinking and talking for over 5 hours. We broke it up so it's episodes, but we do get quite drunk. The thinking was, in the December period and early New Year and stuff like that, I don't want to be chasing guests, trying to hassle people to sit down and have a conversation with me. But equally, that's the time of year that you might have some free time to fill, or you might really want to go for a walk and escape the family and stuff like that, or have the worst of the train journeys because it's you shouldn't be at work, you should be at home by a fire. So I didn't want to not do the podcast. A lot of people take December off. I didn't want to do that. So we've actually turned out we're going to be doing extra episodes in December because this 2 hours of chat turned into 5 hours of drunk rambling. I wanted to do this disclaimer because I can't guarantee the quality is high. I can't remember what we said or what we did, but I do remember that we had a great time, so hopefully you will too. Thank you for the support. Oh, and again, like some of them, I was drunk and forgot to give a gap for the intro music to come in or outro music or anything like that, so they're going to be a sloppy mess. But yeah, thank you for supporting for the whole of 2015 and all the episodes you've got down with and pushed about and used word of mouth to keep us in the top 10 regularly on the iTunes chart and on all podcast charts. So thank you for your support and Happy New Year. This piece of fiction is the intro to destruction. This piece of fiction is the intro to destruction. This piece of fiction is the intro to destruction. This piece of fiction is the intro to destruction. Welcome, welcome, welcome. This is, what is this, the fourth one? How long we've been here? It's been for fucking ages. Destruction Pieces podcast. In case you don't know, we're all a bit drunk. This is episode 4 of our year in review that we expected to be a couple of episodes. I'm reckoning it's going to be about 5. We've now got pizza in, so we're not only going to be drinking and drunk, we're also going to be eating and chewing into the microphone. So thanks for tuning in. Feel free to skip this week's. We're on to August. Everyone remember August?
Not right now, no. What happened?
Oh, come
it was
on.
My birthday. Mm-hmm. It's exciting for me. I'm joined by Chris Glasson and Stuart Whiffin.
Hello.
Continuing on.
Hey, what did we do for your birthday, mate? Can you remember? I can't remember.
I just went to the cinema on my own. We discussed that last week.
Getting right
anyway, let's move on. Films. Let's start with films. As we're eating.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, in fact, actually, before we get to films, I did the Doug Loves Movies podcast, which you and me, Chris, have had a lot of listens to since then.
Really good. Really
again,
good.
I recommend that highly. It's a movie quiz.
Oh, yeah.
It's a movie quiz, and it's just hilarious. And any episode that claims to have Mark Wahlberg on, I recommend you listen to it. It's basically
listen to it. Sorry,
one of the guests just does a Mark Wahlberg or plays the whole show as if he's Mark Wahlberg, and it's just comedy gold constantly. So I recommend that. I love Doug Loves Movies.
You'll never get bored of hearing that guy do his Mark Wahlberg impression.
But films that came out that I saw that month, Straight Outta Compton.
Yep, dope,
amazing, good. Right? Just NWA. Just we're going to be eating. It's going to be the worst podcast ever. just a reminder of how important NWA were to the community and society at that time. The huge leap, the riots that they caused, literally the riots that they caused, was just amazing.
They did that. And
so everyone else is just going to eat and leave me to talk, it seems.
I was pouring beer at the time.
They did that.
I love that NWA. The end of the death of NWA was the start of my hip hop fandom. So I was a huge fan of Ice Cube, and I was retarded for Ice Cube. I didn't know anyone else who liked him. Even hip hop fans didn't like Ice Cube when I was listening to it.
I'm older than you guys, sorry, I've got a marathon.
You mentioned that.
Next episode.
You're sexier, though.
But I kind of grew up, my kind of teenage years was when Rakim, you know, LL Cool J, Public Enemy.
Yep.
And that dropped. And that was huge for us, you know. People were breakdancing and it was a wicked time to be at school.
Yeah.
And obviously when that music came out, that was the hardest sounding stuff out there.
It was stuff you kept hidden. Like there's a piece by Polar Bear.
Yeah.
And it's on YouTube and that, and it's talking about it's actually about his dad leaving. But it's about he got the NWA record. Strike Compton. Mm. And he kept it hidden in a sock in his wardrobe because he's like, if mum finds this, and that's generally what it was like with that kind of music at that time.
Language wise, parental advisory was a big thing.
It was genuine parental advisory as well, you know.
But even as hard as Public Enemy were, and Big Daddy Kane and stuff, like when Straight Outta Compton, when you heard that for the first time, that was just like, I think
the film really nailed it as well in showing that. Over here at the time, a lot of people were talking about how it's encouraging this, it's encouraging that. The film kind of showed you, no, it was the first people addressing that and talking about this that was going on. It was hugely important. The main criticism I saw of the film, and that I had before I saw it, was the lack of attention or the ignoring. It wasn't even the lack of attention, because a film is a film. You pick certain bits to tell, you tell the stories. Dr. Dre's a brother dying got 3 minutes. So it's not like they were, but the lack of addressing Dr. Dre's long history at that
Straight
time of domestic
beating
violence,
up girls.
Beating up women.
Mm.
And that was shit, but at the end of the day, I thought the film was great. But I think it was also great because the discussion was then brought up of his domestic violence. It was amazing. I did a post about it on Instagram, and I was amazed because one of one of the women who he famously beat up, left a comment. Left a comment on the Instagram saying, like, thanks, this is dope. So, and again, it's great that it builds that discussion. And again, I still can't get over that personally. I can't rain down praise on Dre because of that part in his history. And again, people can change, blah, 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 but that's still a permanent.
No, he has to. You have to acknowledge that. And I think he's.
But that doesn't change the fact the film's awesome and the NWA
awesome,
and that he's hugely important in music.
It goes beyond having to accept two things there, and people are so, in life are so, you know, you have to accept yes or no.
Yeah.
Is he cool? Is he not? So, no, I don't want to accept that. I don't want to have to confer to saying Dre's a wanker because he did some really shitty things, because if you start doing that, you're going to find out some amazing things about your friends, family, and also your favourite bands.
Yeah.
Look at the Doors. Oh man, that list is endless of total arseholes who have made amazing music. Dre is one of them. He might not be that now.
And the
now.
Fact is, you try and think of anyone who's had as much. And I argued with someone about this on FaceTime. Just his, over different time periods, his musical influence, the defining of the sound in the NWA period, then the defining of the sound in the G-funk kind of era, and then the defining of the sound on like on 2001
Dre,
and things like that, still Dre and all that, completely different, and Eminem and all this kind of thing.
Like,
there's very few people who've had such distinct different sounds, but a huge imprint on all of them.
In the hip-hop world, I don't think there's many.
In general, so many of the great and big respected bands generally stay in one genre or sound or area. There's people like Bowie
Bowie's the one who's sticking out in my brain. Let's open up this pizza.
But then there's people like Bowie who do awful stuff in the mix of that, who move along and it's not great. I'd also put Madonna in there, as cheesy as that is. She's changed sounds and styles so many times. The Beatles.
Yeah.
Again, though, I'd say the beat. I guess obviously people died, but they had two changes. They had their rock and roll time, and then their hippie time. There wasn't a lot. There wasn't. Again, it's Dre seems to have so many different points.
Three
along the way.
Maybe
three.
Four if you
three,
include
maybe four
now.
If you get to Eminem and some of the input he had on 50 and things like that. Three other films. The Gift. You saw that,
The
Chris.
Gift. I got that shit down here.
It's
right
amazing,
now.
Wasn't it?
Mm. The Gift is one of the best movies this year.
Yeah, I thought it's fantastic. It's so subtle and simple, but the darkness. It reminded me, in a way, this is going to seem like a weird one, of of Room for Romeo Brass in the simplicity of the darkness of the bad
guy. Really, I didn't think that you're kind of
almost laughing at him at first, and then there's just the subtle darkness and build of the intimidation was fantastic.
Totally. It's tough to talk about The Gift without giving too much away, but
yeah,
you should watch out. What's that guy's Joel Egerton?
Joel Egerton, yeah, absolutely amazing.
He's done some really good movies. I mean,
yeah, he's a beast at the moment. And he's just like, going on
Fighter with Tom Hardy. We've propped up Tom Hardy last probably in like episode one.
It's called Warrior, but you know
what did I call it?
You called it The Fighter. So that was with my boy Mark Wahlberg and Christian Bale. But
it's a really good movie,
The Warrior. Yeah, it's fantastic. Another two more films. One that I don't think either of you will have seen, Diary of a Teenage Girl.
Is that where we end the podcast, man? We had Magic Mike Double XL.
It's amazing. It's amazing. Yeah, yeah. It's got Eric from True Blood. Skarsgård.
Is that Skarsgård?
Yep. Yeah. And it's really dark because it's this amazing. It's a grown. I believe it's an 18, so it's not just some teen film. But it's about a teenage girl kind of initially coming into her sexuality and seducing her single mum's boyfriend. So it's really dark because there is paedophilia in there essentially. But it's really, I don't know. It was bold.
There's like Fish Tank.
Yeah. Again, it's very similar, kind of story-wise, but not tonally. Tonally, it feels more like Rushmore and the Royal Tenenbaums and that kind of thing. It's quite quirky and kooky and weird, but it really addresses some really interesting subjects in a bold way. It doesn't just go dirty pedo, evil. Obviously, you know, it leads. If there is any elements that it leads to that, but it's just kind of it's really interestingly done. So
I like that.
I enjoyed that, and I recommend that.
I will watch that.
And the other one, Fantastic Four. Did anyone see it?
I couldn't see it because you.
I made you promise.
You texted me outside of the cinema after you watched it, saying, "Do not go and watch this film. Promise me, don't go and watch this film.
Yeah.
It's dog shit."
Yeah, it was one of the worst things. And I go and see every superhero film. I love them, and I got. It got horrendous reviews, and I got 20 minutes in. I was like, this isn't that bad.
Mm-hmm.
And then by the end, I was like, this is just, I wish this hadn't happened ever. Doctor Doom, and I mentioned that I made this joke on the Doug Loves Movies podcast, so it's a bit of a pre-written, but his costume design and artistic design, it felt like he was a character drawn on the wall in a laser quest.
Man, that's bad.
It just looked that terrible neon.
Man, how the fuck are Marvel fucking that up? Man, they fucked that up twice.
Marvel's Sony, isn't it?
No, Sony. Well, okay, that's a whole nother conversation.
Well, that's weird. That's why.
How the fuck they've fucked up in movies? Doctor Doom is, as far as epitome as villains go, you should be getting him right. It's not great, that difficult.
It's just a metal mask. It's a man in the iron mask, but awesome and powerful. It's
not
powerful.
That difficult. And I haven't... And now you've made me not watch that. Not made me, but I've learnt my lessons from awfully bad films that I've walked out and had episodes of anger where, you know, we talk about Tomorrow Never Dies, James Bond, one of the worst movies ever, Terminator 3... When you were saying shit like, don't watch this film, it's that bad. I couldn't watch it.
And that's bearing in mind that I didn't hate The Green Lantern.
Everyone hated on that.
So bearing in mind, I have the leniency to bear with The Green Lantern, so that shows how bad this was. Mm. It wasn't good. What's next? Actually, we're going to Stu. I don't know if you listened to any of these. I've noted four podcasts of the Distraction Pieces that year, so or that month, so we can kind of just pick one. But
okay.
I had the birthday specials with my mum and dad. I had the Greenpeace special. It was a month of specials. I had the Greenpeace special, the drug special with Dr. Susie Gage, and the sex and death special with Carla Valentine. Any jumping out there?
No.
Did you not listen to any of them?
None of them.
You didn't listen to my parents. You've met my parents. Awesome.
I don't know why I didn't listen to them. I don't know why they're not on.
August, you're in your flip-flops. bowling about down South End. For me, again, I won't go into tons of detail on them. The drug special was important for me because it was Dr. Susie Gage has done a lot of tests into recreational drugs, into the causation of mental health issues and the use of them for treatment of mental health issues.
Okay.
So looking into things like cannabis psychosis, but also looking into using mushrooms or acid or variants of that to treat schizophrenia. Also...
Really?
Amazingly, to treat a PTSD and depression, right? You'll relate to this, Chris, because I know these are drugs that I don't know if you want me to talk about your drug past, but that we've done. But using using essentially ecstasy or MDMA or whatever, using that in therapy sessions for people with PTSD who struggle to talk about their problems and issues. So using a controlled substance like this, because you'll know that when you do these drugs, you will tell a stranger your deepest, darkest secrets and have this great interaction. And it was fascinating to hear that used as a function to go, right, these people are struggling to talk about this. We're going to put them on these drugs for this session so they can open up and share this and get help and develop. And I find that fascinating. I think that's an amazing thing.
I think that is something I need to listen to. I feel terrible not listening to your podcast.
Again, it was a fascinating thing. It's that interesting approach of going, right, actually, as soon as she said all that, I was like, right, from personal experience, I can say, yes, I've never been more open to a stranger than when
isn't it only we can only say these things from personal experience? And the sad thing is that when I was at school, our drugs thing, I remember our drugs conversation was about hash. It was like, hey, here's this man, his name is Pete, and he's smoking marijuana, and when he comes off of marijuana, everything speeds up. And it was ridiculous miseducation. My education thankfully came from my friends and reading about shit, and thankfully I didn't have enough peer pressure to start doing drugs until I was ready to start taking them. And all these other additional uses, we've alienated drugs so bad that it's like you say, it's you're doing it for raving purposes, you're doing it to go out and have a laugh. And actually, there's no other medicinal use for that or practicality. Yeah. It's ridiculous. We don't have open adult conversations that when I talk to my parents about it, like within a minute, they're lost.
It's just the education on it. And Dr. Susie Gage is hopefully going to be doing a podcast soon just about that, like picking a drug at a time, and educating on it, talking about it. And again, I really pushed during that episode to do just say why to drugs. So rather than just say no to drugs, just say why and give a breakdown and don't be biased. Don't be saying drugs are great. Going, here's the genuine risks.
Here's the reasons why everyone's doing it people decide to. Susie Gage sounds hot, by the way.
Yeah.
Susie Gage, I mean, because I'd like to be there.
Stu, you got a mouthful of pizza now. What are you going to say?
Well, I mean, aside from you guys, like, I've not had much of a past regarding drugs. It's doing what I've done for a living as a club promoter.
A lot of poppers, wasn't it?
Like, I was always...
You did a lot of poppers, though, bro.
I was always focused on working.
No, puppy stew.
I mean, it's a surprise in that industry that you've not had that experience. Because it's an industry that's very... But a lot of the promoters in that are very much...
I know, absolutely.
And they run clubs badly because they're so messed up.
Back in the 90s, it was poppy stew.
But obviously...
You've said that about five times, Chris. Let's move on from that joke.
As you mentioned in the last one, I'm quite serious when I'm at work. I believe you just said I was a miserable prick, Chris.
Poppy stew. Yeah, I was.
But I've always been the straight guy when everyone's...
Bullshit! Go on.
When everyone's mangled. And it is weird, because you see pros and cons of it, and I understand what she was saying, and I think it's great. What did she say about cocaine?
She didn't go into great detail on cocaine, but again, it was interesting. There's an episode of, again, the Joe Rogan podcast, which I played to you, Dr. Carl Hart. Now, episode two...
Wow, that was brilliant.
Now, episode... He was on again in... I think it was in September, and that was episode 698. But the one the one that I played you was from last year, and it's number 469. And
watch that.
I recommend, or listen to it. I recommend that hugely. and in that, Dr. Carl Hart, similarly, is someone who's dedicated his life to study of recreational drugs, and it's amazing because where he grew up, it was ravaged by crack cocaine. And he started to do these studies to try and help. He was like, I need to learn about this drug and get it out of the community and all that. And what he learned has made him one of the biggest advocates of the legalization of all drugs that there is. Because the fact is, cocaine and crack cocaine... Like, this is an example. I don't want to just rip their whole podcast. You should genuinely listen, because it's mind-blowing, right, Chris?
It kind of told me things that I didn't know. Like fundamentally big things that I just thought... I knew.
Huge. Like, I mean, just...
About crack cocaine.
Just two examples. I mean, we'll go into cocaine, but the one that caught me immediately, and again, will hopefully draw more people to go and listen to that, was that withdrawal symptoms of heroin. Again, we've all being English, we've all seen Trainspotting.
Yep.
We know what it is. There's a baby crawling across the scene. There's also like it's the same physical reaction as having the flu. That's all it is.
That's the flu. Insane. It's no worse than
that. But again, you kind of the first I heard, I thought that's insane. And then I thought actually I've had the flu and thought I'm dying. So if that thought is then strengthened by the mythology of you're going to die and all this, then it's a nightmare. But again, it's actually the physical reaction. It's just like having the flu. And the other thing was he was saying crack cocaine or crack and cocaine are the exact same thing.
Okay.
And they made crack cocaine basically because at that point in the 80s or 90s, cocaine was the expensive drug.
Yep.
You had to buy large amounts. They made cracks so that they could sell rocks to poor people. They could sell a small amount.
Easier to cut up and sell.
Easier to cut and divide up and sell in small amounts. It's actually the same drug. So the mythology that you try crack and you're on the streets and you're down and out, whereas you do coke and you work in a good office and all this, it's the way in which they're presented. It's the same drug. Mm-hmm. It's the way the system is set up to punish people more heavily for crack cocaine than for cocaine.
How it was perceived in those areas that had that sort of influence. Because, do you know what? I've known a few people who are normal, I'd say normal, that's the wrong thing, just human beings who you wouldn't expect were doing crack, have said to me, Chris, there was this one time, and I've been like, you know, with my background, really? And it wasn't crazy, it didn't change you, it didn't...
I urge people to go and listen to these episodes for greater education, because we're not quite educated enough. But again...
Can I ask you what your thoughts are on cocaine?
I hate cocaine. I think it's an ugly, gross drug.
And what your experiences are with yourself, if you've taken it, or being around other people
I'll go into this quite briefly, because I got into a big... Last year, I got into a big, almost, like, damaging debate about this on Twitter, because... As Chris will know, I've ranted about cocaine before. I think it's a bullshit drug, but he
can't handle it, Stu. He gets so wasted on it.
Cocaine, I've never taken, and I'm quite open about my drug use in the past. So cocaine is one I've just, and the reason for that is, and it's the same reason I've never smoked a cigarette. Because the reason for that is, I can see the benefits of all the drugs I've done. I smoke some weed, I become more chilled or whatever. I smoke a cigarette, I become addicted to nicotine. I didn't get that.
Yeah, but you look like Bruce Willis.
I mean, that's pretty cool, yeah.
Yeah.
But I smoke, or I take acid, I hallucinate, I take pills, I'm happy.
Yeah.
I take cocaine, I become an arsehole. And that's just from my experience of other people.
And mine.
I did this tweet.
He wasn't doing coke, he was just being an asshole.
I did this tweet saying, if you want to take cocaine, do, but just be aware that you're an insufferable cunt when you're on it. And I said that, and then I did a follow-up tweet saying, I have been with some of my favourite people in the world on cocaine, and some of our friends, I don't want to say exactly you, Chris, but possibly you.
I actually don't even think I've ever done coke around you.
And the examples I was given, some of the people I love the most in the world, when I've been with them on cocaine... We've all had a few drinks. When I've been with them on cocaine, I found them absolutely insufferable. And I did that tweet, but I did that tweet without having a look at the news that morning. Was when a few days before, there'd been all the... It all come out about the Saatchi guy beating up...
Nigella
Lawson.
Amazing talent.
But that morning, he had come out saying that she was on coke and she was out of control, and that's why it all got there. So it looked like I was supporting that in some way. So I then had these big debates going, no. It, regardless of that, I've said you're insufferable. I don't care how insufferable someone is. That shouldn't be a justification.
What's your problem with drug? What's your problem with cocaine?
Just, I've never hung out with anyone on it and not thought they're absolutely... gross, like just see, absolutely horrendous.
I have to say that we're flip flopping from, you know, we're going from one extreme to the other, because I've hung out with a multitude of people, including myself, who've done it, tried it. To me, one of the largest issues with cocaine is its manufacture and distribution.
Yep,
and that to me puts me off wanting to do it. But then I'm not the average person. Not talking about how many times it gets stepped on before it gets served up. I'm talking about how it's dealt with at source and the abuse of the people and the environment that it goes through. Because to me, like what you're saying here is that you've never met anyone who's not been an arsehole on coke. Firstly, I don't know how many people you've actually tested before you knew they were doing coke. But there are people who do that, and they're actually okay.
Yeah.
But then I've met people who are completely off the charts on it.
Yeah.
And I've met people who will take it or leave it. And I've been more down in that zone. Yeah. But what's put me off that in being an adult, and by adult I mean being someone who's decided to educate myself in drugs, which is what I'm saying is the most important thing is to educate yourself. Mm-hmm. It's not even the buzz that I think is relevant. It's what did it take for you to get that buzz? And what it took for you to get that buzz in cocaine was a lot of suffering.
Yeah.
And I'm okay with people being a bit of a dick, you know. I've had to sit here with you two for 4 hours. Like, that's fine with me, you know, to an extent. But if people had to suffer for that, then, you know, that's a whole
different... Again, it's a tough one, but I know for a fact that's all well and good to say now, but when you're out drunk or whatever else and there's an option of it, you're not sitting there going... The suffering of people. Do you know what I mean? In that moment, so it's kind of...
No, totally not. No, I've never gone,
I'll pass on this because of, But, again, so what's your experiences and views? Because you approached that question initially.
For someone that is a club promoter, I'm quite naive on that front.
Yeah.
I've never seen anything positive on... from people on cocaine.
Interesting, because the only other drug that I would put in a similar category is alcohol.
Exactly. I've
never seen any positive from alcohol. Once or twice at a karaoke.
There's a bunch of people who are drinking who you don't pick up on, right?
Yeah.
But sorry, Shane.
No. I've seen lots of... do you know why? You know, what you've just said there, alcohol, it equates to the same as well. Standing outside nightclubs, I've seen all manner of horrendous things and erratic behaviour that isn't rational and doesn't generally come down to someone that's just gone and had two cans of Tizer. Do you know what I mean?
Or Sam Marshall, who came with us to the MMA, he's run pubs in Newcastle and in Chester Street. He's recently started doing... he's opening a CrossFit gym, partly because he's massively into it, partly because he said... I've seen so much of my life that what I do for a living is seeing the worst of people.
Yeah.
Well, seeing people drunk and being out of control and being bad. I now want to do something where I see the best of people, seeing people achieve stuff and better themselves and all that. And it's true. If you've spent your life in that industry, no matter how much you do see, or there are positives and you do have a good night, it's still, you're generally, there's always something, at a club night or at a pub, there will always be one person that you see that you're like, man, that's depressing.
Mm. Yeah.
You know, so it's
it's a weird one. I just sometimes when I've seen things, you know, in events all over the country that I've done, the ugly things that, generally, especially the more extreme things, will always
alcohol related,
fundamentally cocaine as well.
Yeah. Well, let's move on for that. And one more recommendation that you'll listen to Dr. Carl Hart on the Joe Rogan Experience. Another podcast
listen to that.
Of that month was...
has Dr. Carl Kennedy got a podcast?
I wish. He plays some beautiful songs. The Fighter and the Kid that month had Tim Kennedy on. You listen to that one?
Yes, I did.
It was amazing. And Tim Kennedy is a fighter, but he's also a former...
Squaddy
and soldier. And again, I'm not someone who's just like a mark for soldiers and for patriotism. I'm kind of the anti that in many ways.
You are the anti that in many ways.
I'm not. I don't. For example, and this will get a lot of hate. I wear a poppy. because I believe it's too broad. It's supporting all soldiers. And the fact is, there's a lot of wars I haven't supported. There's been a lot of actions at war that I don't support. So whilst whoever's listening, I'm not happy that your granddad died at war. I'm pleased he did that for us. I'm grateful. Mm-hmm. But I don't support overall that action of all soldiers are heroes.
Where do you stand on Help for Heroes?
Plus you are pretty again, tight.
Yeah, I don't support it. I don't support Help for Heroes because, again, it's that broad generalisation. I don't, and again, this will get me a lot, I always get in arguments over this, I don't think all soldiers are heroes. And I think there's no arguing that. I think just history shows there's been soldiers on the British side, on the American side, that have done horrendous things, yeah. Absolutely horrendous things in times of war. So I don't think all soldiers are heroes. Therefore, unless, and I want this, obviously, I'd rather leave them to do what they do and I'll stay away from it, unless Help for Heroes are going to do a detailed background check on each soldier and what they actually got up to in this country or that country and things like, which again I wouldn't want, it's nothing to do with me, but yeah, I'm not personally a supporter of that. But Tim Kennedy on the Firing the Kid podcast is absolutely amazing, and the stories he tells and his attitude and outlook, he's intelligent, he's articulate, and yeah, I thought it was an amazing episode and definitely worth
it. Has he done Rogan as well?
I think he's done Rogan as well. This is going to sound harsh, but because a Brian Stan is also a soldier, I get them mixed up.
Right.
These white soldiers. They're all the same.
Are they the same race?
Do you know what?
We don't all look the same.
It was Brian Stan, I've confused it with.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because there was a one with Tim Kennedy, though, where he was saying he did a fighting for the troops event.
Yeah.
And he was coming down to the cage. And it's again.
That was the first one, wasn't it?
Yeah.
It was the first one for the troops. And Kennedy, who was he fighting? It was a headline fight, he was.
Yeah, I can't think who he was against. But again, it's on a military base.
Yeah.
And he was coming down, and one of the people he saw in the front row, the last time he saw him, he was handing his best mate to him on a helicopter because he'd been blown up. It's like, man, the mental strength to go and do these fights is one thing, but the mental strength to stay focused, we're like, oh shit, I know that guy. The last time I saw you, I literally was handing my mate, and his mate survived, and all this kind of thing. It's huge. And yeah, I thought that was a great one. We're going to move on to the next month. Do you want a little bit of music first? Because this month, whichever month we've just done, God, I've drunk too much.
Wasn't that July we just did?
No, we've done August. Because remember, no, it was August. It was my birthday, remember?
Nah.
Remember when we talked about my birthday?
What's the tune?
Nah. It's my song of the year. It's Queen's Speech, a Lady Leisha, which I played to Chris as well on the trip. But
that was heavy. She's from heavy Birmingham. Video as well.
It's weird that this big grime thing's blowing up, but I think a Lil Sims and Lady Leisha are my two kind of shining stars in this song. Yeah, I'm going to play a little bit of this, but I just love really comedy lyrics, funny lyrics, but well written and well woven.
Well written, well executed, amazing video, watch it.
Let's have a little play.
I hold it down with a snapshot, go over your head with a snapback, uploaded a pic with a tap that, and your flow so old, granddad. It's just burnt out. I'm way too much like a black cat. I what? When you start chatting in the club for? Just that's right. Like your fam alarm, your fam alarm. Ain't no girl better than. I'm on the roads, caravan. Let me do this fast, Ramadan. Cause it's going down, avalanche. I'm a TV show, paragraph. Queen Leisha, my reign, Anorak. Take you off as well, Nazareth. Oh Jesus, oh Lord, oh Jesus. A couple of snaky friends, just Adam and Eve.
That's right.
There's no debate on who's better.
Come on.
I turn a man to a girl like Bruce Jenner. I shine down the dance like me run down the dance like I be the one they love, I be the don. They know where I'm from. Oh, one to the 2-1. Your brethren, where is your hairline gone? I can't believe it. I can't believe the cheek. Some girls wake up and don't even brush their teeth. That's a dead thing. A bad breath to own it. How could you talk my name and you ain't even brush your teeth?
Brush your teeth.
Brush your teeth. Brush your teeth.
Never brush your teeth.
Brush your teeth.
There we go. We can't play all of that, but yeah,
I was enjoying that.
I love it. Number one, I love that one of the biggest hits of the year. I mean, this was huge on its first a week or two, and this was also really interesting. It was one of the first videos I saw that really blew up on Facebook video rather than on YouTube. And in the first week or two, or in fact, in a matter of days, it had 18 million views on Facebook, which is insane. If you think of how hard that is on YouTube to to get these views. So yeah, it blew up huge, and I love it. Number one, the fact that the chorus is all just about brushing your teeth, which again I think is beautiful. I think that's wonderful. But a few of the little lines. I can't think of what any of them are now. But yeah.
Go on, you can. Yes, she can.
No, I can't think of any lines. But when she's saying, I'm going to do this fast, Ramadan, and just loads of real just word association, I'm going to keep this short paragraph, and just all these... Yeah, I think it's great. And as it goes on, I mean, she referenced on that bit we played there, the Bruce Jenner stuff. Later on, she references a Rachel Dozel, just a brilliant line, which she's saying, I've got a light-skinned friend that looks like Rachel Dozel, and I've got a dark-skinned friend that looks like Rachel Dozel. And just the beauty, just using all these references. And it made me think of, I think he's stopped now, but a UK rapper, Maestro, I used to do these amazing end-of-the-year raps, and it'd just be essentially what these long-ass podcasts are, but condensed into a 4 or 5 or 6 minute thing.
Thinking about it for next year?
Yeah, maybe. Easier than this shit. But it was great, but it was always that fear of, right, because it's specifically that, you're putting a lot of effort into something that's really dated. Like, it's like a few weeks' time, that's out the window. You can't listen to that. Whereas this song, because it's got a few references in, but the video, again, as me and Chris were both a fanboying over the other day, it's really simple. It's her walking down the street. It's one take, and it's just, there's stuff going on, but it's just brilliantly.
It seems like one take. Done. I don't know if any...
It's definitely one take.
If any nerds out there, film nerds out there, can pick us up on that and can pick out where we've missed a cut. But we couldn't see a cut, could we?
I mean, also this year, I was the host of the British One Take Movie Awards. So because of my history of Interdiction and Stunner and numerous other One Take classics...
So what are they, yo?
Huh?
What are they?
Just big songs. You should listen to them, Chris. You should check them out at some point. Thanks for the support. But yeah, no, it's a great one take video. And she just, the thing that struck me, a lot of people often get angry with me because I'm a big fan of Lil Wayne, and it surprises all my fans. And the thing that I cannot not love about Lil Wayne is how comfortable he is on the mic. You hear him in the booth, he's the most relaxed person you've ever heard. And she's the same on this video. You've never seen someone so happy to be just walking down the street and rapping. It's like, that's infectious. That just makes you so excited. And it's really, I love it. And Chris has taken his shirt off. Oh, damn. Anyway, that's a good time to end. It was also that month that I auditioned for The Bastard Executioner and had my first days on set there. But I've talked about that on the Kurt Satter podcast and numerous others, but that was a big moment too.
Well, you know, obviously that'll be something that you'll probably not watch
when that's available. Chris will pass
it
on that.
I'll watch it. We'll talk about
there's other people worth watching. Let's go on to a September. Podcast wise, I had Andrew Shim on the podcast.
Loved it.
Don't even need to talk about the podcast particularly, rather than just talk about that was also the month that This Is England 90 was on.
Yeah,
and
what a return from Shane Meadows. Just what did you think? It blew me away. I loved it.
I watched the whole thing in a day and was crying.
Yeah.
And
it's just mind-blowing.
I was crying. And I think when my flatmate come home, which was after three of them,
yeah,
I was crying. I was saying, this is the best thing. He's mastered film in my eyes.
Did not want it to end.
It's so amazing, isn't it? Just talking from... The film originally was a really good film. I think it's amazing. I think it's a classic.
Mm-hmm.
I think the series have now surpassed that. I genuinely think they've just taken it.
It's just you've got fucking that longer.
Yeah, you've just got that time to meet the characters in the series.
And he's got that. He's so good at doing that. Like.
Yeah. I talked about this with Shim, but it's one of the only kind of runs of things that I can think that it's truly an ensemble piece. Like, you can pick almost any character. You can pick a Woody and his amazing scenes. That dinner table scene with Lowell and Woody in particular, that were amazing. Lowell's obviously got numerous amazing scenes, but then in the film you can go back to Combo and Shim.
Mm-hmm.
Their interaction in that. Literally everyone you can pick and say, that scene was a real standout and amazing thing. So, and that's rare. You normally have your one or two real actors and then everyone else is towing the line.
Great characters. You know, it's far from a Shane Meadows masterpiece, but I've always thought that to look at Gavin and Stacey,
right?
Gavin and Stacey as characters are almost just a little bit of glue in the middle.
Yeah.
And the show is totally based around the fantastic characters
Bryden. I could watch Bryden for days.
Yeah, like, you know, every single character in that, supporting character, is fucking brilliant.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
And so
what a series. And again, I think they nailed it as well on the first few episodes, really leaning heavily on the nostalgia of the music and it just being, oh, do you remember this? And then on episode kind of end of two, kind of into three, going, oh, right, no, we are amazing writers and actors drama as well. It's not... So the first...
The first episode and a half,
it's just like, do you remember that song?
Weirdly, that's what makes a good horror movie, though. It's the same. It's that same tactic. It's breeding familiarity.
That's the one.
And that's what he does.
It was every cliche baggy tune, Rosie's, you know,
yeah.
Mondays,
yeah, yeah.
Charlatans, and it was almost like the first episode, or it might have been the second episode. It was the first two that I thought were leaning more to some of the comedy of it, like when Woody's old boss come out of the cabinet.
Just hilarious.
And,
oh, my God.
It was amazing.
We're crazy.
Yeah. I'm doing a thing. When this comes out, it will have already happened, but next week I'm doing a pilot. I can't say much about it. It's a pilot for an animation to try and get made, and it's... me, a Brett Goldstein of Super Bob and Corner Boys and all that, James Acaster and Joseph Gilgan, who's Woody, obviously. And it's just instantly that, as soon as I heard them people, I was like, two of them I know well and absolutely adore, and one of them I've never met but think is a genius. Yeah. So, yeah, craziness.
Amazing.
Obviously it was quite comical because them scenes were amazing. Obviously,
that's
remind me of what the scene was called with the...
Sniff banging.
You know, and
but that was the thing that got me with the character of Woody. Is it's so amazing because he's absolutely hilarious. Him high-fiving the priest at the wedding was one of the funniest moments in the history of television, in my opinion. As he puts his hand up to, he's such a good comedy character. But then when he got angry with his parents, fuck, that was amazing and intense and real. It was suddenly a really genuine, real thing.
It seemed real. Right? I didn't feel like I was watching a show.
It's similar to Paddy Considine in Room for Romeo Brass, where you build this comedy character and then when it switches, you're like, oh, fucking hell.
Yeah,
right.
I only saw Room for Romeo Brass after the Shin podcast. Mm-hmm. I've watched pretty much the rest of these films, but I've never seen that.
Yeah.
And I love Paddy. I think he's amazing.
Yep.
And fuck, man. What an amazing film and
hell of a movie.
How much did you just want someone to just beat that fucker?
Mm.
And like
again, I said it in the Paddy episode. I don't know if I've ever hated a villain in a film so much and loved them at other points.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah,
and it's similar. It's that similar twist of Woody of. He really almost became too much of a parody, and you're worrying that he's just there for light relief. And then he had a couple of moments, and the dinner table scene was another one where apparently that was two takes. So they shot that twice, and they shot it for half an hour. So as Shane Meadows does a lot of stuff, it's not really scripted.
Yeah.
You've got it's workshops and it's practice, and it's gone through. It's not really scripted. And then they've gone twice. We're going to film this for half an hour. I recommend. I'm following the Walk Films Instagram and Twitter because this is where I got all this from. They filmed two scenes for half an hour and they played it out. They made it happen as the characters rather than as a scripted as a character. They just played it out.
That makes total sense. Mm. And I think where I started getting the feeling they were doing that was, do you remember the scene where Woody's lying on the sofa?
Yeah.
He's watching trash on telly and his mum and dad phones him.
And he doesn't want to...
I can't... Yeah, imagine brilliant. How funny that is. Like he's come back to his mum and that conversation. I struggle to imagine someone writing that.
It's interesting the faith in actors, and this is something again.
I think
this is something
to have it.
The biggest thing that I took away from doing The Bastard Executioner was I had a scene with Danny Capani, and this was quite early on. It was only one of my first scenes. He's a great actor. He's been in a lot of things. He was in Misfits and in numerous other bits. He's done a lot. He's been around a lot. He's done a lot of stage stuff. He's an amazing actor. We had this scene and there was a particular... It was just me and him in the scene. And there was a particular bit that the director wanted him to do one thing and he wanted to do another thing. And it was the slightest, it was a body movement, essentially. And he argued furiously. And I was stood there, like, new to this, like, this is stupid, man. Just do what the director says. And then we had to cut for a bit. And this isn't spoiling anything, it's part of the process. And his argument, he kept saying, let me do my job. Let me do my job. I'm an actor. Let me do my job. And when we all kind of went outside and discussed it, the point was made that the directors of different episodes of series are often different and they change. And again, they're amazingly talented, but Danny had been playing that character since the pilot and for months and months and months. So he knew that character. So he was saying, have faith in me. Trust that my character would do this. I know you want me to do this, but trust. And it was weird because at the time I was like, initially at the time I was like, I'll be honest, I thought this dude's being a bit of a dick, man. He's stickling over something that's not important. I was like, just do as the guy asks, it's not a big deal. But after hearing him, I was like, no, you're right. If you're that good, and I'm nowhere near that yet, but if you're that good, you've become that character and you can say, no, that's not what I would do. And that's what kind of Shane has the faith to do. He has the faith to go to actors, just be... He always feels he doesn't write a character. He writes a slot for a character and then he finds that character. It feels like that with so many. He finds that
there's
person,
no
they
difference
slot in there.
In that than in any day modern management.
Yeah.
And that is brilliant that that is what you need to do. You can't just sit there and point people around.
Yeah. I mean, let's move on. This month was when I had the Tall Dark Friend episode of the podcast, which was with Jordan Gray, who again we touched upon in last week's. Jordan Gray is a young lady that wasn't physically born a young lady, was physically born a male, up the road from us, and had played gigs for you over the years. And it was interesting because someone else had recommended a song of hers, and I listened, and it was kind of a bit spoken word, a bit rappy, and it was really inspirational. I thought she nailed it, talking of her experiences becoming a woman in Tilbury, making that transition from male to female. And it was weird because you and me had a phone conversation just about just catching up on UFC.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, I've got this cool podcast. And I was like, it's this person who lives in Tilbury who did this. And you were like, Jordan?
Yeah.
And you've worked with Jordan and done stuff with Jordan for years, right?
Yeah. She's lovely.
Talent is a songwriter and a fascinating.
And I thought the podcast, she came over so well.
Yeah.
She was articulate. And
you're right on that. What I loved was intelligent, articulate, but also really pulled me up on the ignorance that I had, which I liked. I was there for.
But I was cool with it though.
Yeah, like, we were all right with it. At the points I'd ask her stuff, she'd keep reminding me, I can only speak for me.
Yeah,
I can't speak for all transgender people.
Yeah.
This particular thing you're asking, I'm not offended by that.
Yeah,
some might be. We don't have a newsletter that goes around and we all tick off and go, right, we're now offended by that.
Yeah.
And some of that is like, I don't know Caitlyn Jenner. I've never met Caitlyn Jenner. I can't speak. And I was asking a lot because the Caitlyn stuff was happening.
Yeah.
Asking a lot of questions about that. It's like, I don't know any more than you do. I'm in a different, completely different world to Caitlyn Jenner.
A completely different world. And that's what made that so interesting, because Where she was born was where I was born, and it's fucking rough there.
Yeah,
and a lot of people down there, taking nothing away from them, but a lot of people down there are not that forgiving to somebody that was born a man.
As we touch upon it a lot in the podcast, and there's a lot of greatness in all of these areas. I think there's always richness in this kind of situation, but Tilbury and Grays and all these, there is a lot of BNP turned into UKIP, turned into, you know, whatever else along the way. And as I said in the podcast, and I think I actually got it from that initial phone conversation, I think it's something that you said to me, was that it's a world of difference. So it's going to be interesting hearing the difference between a walking down a Hollywood Boulevard in a Versace dress to walking down Tilbury High Street in a Primark dress.
Yeah.
You know, that's a big difference. And, just such a fascinating and articulate...
Yeah.
A girl, and she came and asked a question on the live podcast as well.
Oh,
and that
really?
Was great to kind of she'd come along, and I was just blown away by that. And it's one of the most excited I've been about a podcast. So I heard that song, and from hearing that song to sitting in her living room talking to her was about 48 hours.
Yeah,
and I really, you know, I generally they take a while to set up, but when you about, let's do this, because it felt so relevant. And it felt obvious to do a transgender type subject because of all that was going on, which I'd avoid because I don't want to do things just because they're the current hot topic. But it was that fascinating thing of the different world that this was taking place in.
Totally.
Let's keep on the podcast tip for a bit. Adam Buxton, his podcast came back in September as well, and he's fantastic. I don't know if you've caught any of them, but he had
pretty much all of them,
Louis Theroux, John Ronson, and numerous great people on. So I highly recommend that. He also, I got to go on his podcast, and he had me.
You guys cross pollinated, didn't you?
We did cross. I pollinate, so I went on his and he went on mine, and it was a lovely time. But again, I just think he's nailed that. He's done in a similar way like this again. Like, one of the reasons I'm not hiding this, one of the reasons of recording these now, like we're recording it in December, at the beginning of December, is that these are now our catalogue is sorted over Christmas. Yeah. Like when it's hard to get guests and things like that. Can sit back. And he's done a similar thing. He's finished his podcast for now, and then he's doing a Christmas special with Joe Cornish. So Adam and Joe back together for the first time in years and just doing it. So again, absolutely amazing. I recommend all of them podcasts. The other one I wanted to touch on, which I know neither of you probably wouldn't have caught, the Richard Herring podcast is fantastic. I had Richard Herring on the other week.
I heard it the other day.
I've done his podcast. Oh, you came along, didn't you, when I was on the Richard Herring one?
That's kind of the only time I heard it.
That's the only time. But he had, in September, he had Limmy on. And you and me are big fans of Limmy.
Yeah, 100%.
And Limmy's, again, if you're not familiar with Limmy, go to Amazon or whatever and buy the two-series box set of The Limmy Show. Just buy it, because it's masterful. He's a Scottish comedian. He was almost on Distraction Pieces. In fact, in September, I think it was, and we just couldn't make it work. But just, it's insane. It's mental, but it's absolutely hilarious. It's bizarre that among comedians in the comedy scene, The Limmy Show is seen as one of the best shows in recent years, yet it was on BBC Scotland, but wasn't on BBC in the UK because his accent is too strong. And they generally just felt it wouldn't translate. It's too hard. But it's amazing.
I think he's abstract. I think he's intelligent.
Yeah.
I mean, it's really funny stuff.
Yeah.
Have you seen any Limmy stuff, Stu?
Yeah.
He's great.
Really good. What is that where Dee Dee goes to... Dee Dee gets on a bus. Man, that kills me.
There's loads
Yorker,
of...
Yorker.
There's great... He does all these different characters, and one of them is just kind of stoned or hungover or drunk or something.
What?
And he's watching... In one episode, he's watching the advert, and it says, "New by Danone." And he's like, all right. And then the advert ends, and he goes, Danone. And he's like... They just say new by Danone, but then at the end they called it Danon. And then he watches TV for like 24 hours to see it again. Like, and they're like, new from the Danone. And he's sitting on it, just sitting there, Danon. And it's like, is it Danone or is it Danone? It's fucking, it's genius. It's just a guy sitting there just mumbling in his head, like all just voiceover of his thoughts again. And then I was like, no, I must have just not thought that right. It's masterful.
Oh, brilliant.
So, yeah, I recommend that hugely. Let's get a fight in, some MMA talk. Did anyone see Sicario before we do that?
No, came out? No, that was one film I'm desperate to watch.
It's fantastic. It's really well done. My only criticism would it had the same effect to me as Traffic. Did you see that?
Traffic to me was anticlimactic.
For me, it was like, that was amazing, but I had no desire to see it again.
No,
it's
exactly.
Kind of, you end it and go, well done, everyone.
No,
I kind of had traffic
with the lineup, thinking, right, wow, yeah, this is going to be incredible. And
I enjoyed Sicario more than Traffic, but it was a bit of one name. I did kind of end it go, that was just great. Shit. I don't really want to ring people and tell them about it immediately. That was just good. The only fight I've noted was Arlovski v Frank Mir.
Yeah.
Which was kind of a letdown in all reality. It was a hugely exciting hype thing because they're both former proper heavyweight legends that have had a bit of a resurgence. And it was cool because it meant Arlovski has kept his winning streak and could potentially get a title shot in the new year and stuff like that. But yeah, it wasn't that great.
It was no thriller for me.
Let's then talk about a young man called Nick Diaz.
Yeah.
Let me tell the story here. Nick Diaz, the year before, fought Anderson Silva, Anderson being one of the greatest of all time, making a comeback after an injury. In that fight, at one point, Nick Diaz laid on his back and rested his head on his arm. Lure him in. So it was bizarre. But in that fight, Anderson Silva, afterwards, the drug test came back, he popped for steroids. Or performance enhancers. Nick Diaz, the drug test came back, and again he popped for weed. So it's an interesting thing. Number one, should weed be banned anyway? It's hardly a performance enhancer. There's arguments in Brazilian jiu-jitsu that you can perform better when you're on weed because you're more relaxed, mm-hmm. you can see the angles more. But the big thing was at this point, so that all happened last year, at this point, Nick Diaz went to court, and people who don't know Nick Diaz, he's got a huge fan base because he's just proper from the streets, and he's just a little thuggy gangster. So he goes into this
man. He's a fighter. He's a real scrapper. He was the look bully at your school.
Face there, and he's just on the calling wall, yeah. it on.
He was the bully the at your school.
And again, he got into MMA because him and his brother used to sit up and watch Bruce Lee videos on YouTube. So again, that's kind of the illustration of what kind of the guy this is. He's a massive stoner, but he happens to be one of the best fighters in the world as well. So he pops for weed. He's got his court case, and he decides, or on the advice of his counsel, he decides to plead no comment throughout. And the court case is screened live on Fight Pass. So you've got this long court case of them asking big in-depth questions, and Nick Diaz going no comment, and then getting more creative, like no comment, no comment, and really going through. And in the end, he gets a 5-year ban. Now, you've got to bear in mind as well, people have popped for steroids and got 6 months banned, 3 months banned,
Coke,
a 1-year
zero
ban. Coke was a zero ban.
What's John Jones? Ban?
Zero ban for Coke.
Not had a ban. The incident he got in, the Coke he got popped for, he didn't get a ban. The incident with the hit and run was outside of the cage, therefore it wasn't part of the commission. So it was up to the UFC, it's discretionary, suspended. When, you know, they waited until he'd had his court case. He didn't get put in prison. He got community service. Therefore, they could say they could have been sued essentially for not allowing him his job back because he hadn't been in prison for it. But yeah, so many. It's just bizarre.
What did Lombard get done for?
He got done for steroids, and that was I think a 6 month, maybe a 12 month. But again, the fact that you can get done for steroids, and the fact that anyone can give a 5-year ban to an athlete is frightening. If it's not steroids, I guess if it's repeated performance enhancing drugs, but for
we're talking about 100 meters repeated performance enhancing that will make you sprint.
But even that, when Dwayne Chambers got his lifetime ban, that was overturned because it was illegal to give a lifetime ban because it's not right in employment and so on and so forth.
Right.
So yeah, it's kind of a bizarre. And basically, the fact is, everyone saw that the judges were getting more and more annoyed with Nick Diaz, so they gave him a big ban because he's a bit of a dick. That's not what you're meant to do. You're meant to have your guidelines laid out.
He had zero
right?
courtroom charisma. I was saying this to us on that chat group.
What's Dana said?
It's
going to
ruin him.
He's kind of commented. He's,
which is what he has to do.
A few fighters,
to an extent.
A few different fighters. Henry Cejudo, yeah. the gold yeah. medalist Olympian wrestler, he was great. He came out and said, I won't fight in Nevada. Forget it. Even if I get the title, I'm not going to fight in Nevada because I don't support that commission handing out such a 5-year ban for someone. And again, and Nick Diaz has a license for weed. He's smoking weed legally. Again, it's all kind of bullshit in America where it's legal and you can get a license or whatever.
Not,
But he's smoking it legally. He's not a break in the law. It's just the in competition law. So again, it'd be different if he was popped for an illegal drug or something like that. It's kind of bizarre.
But why is it competition law? So, you know, laws are there to prevent things getting abused. But mm-hmm. why is that, when they sat there and gone, okay, he's done this, so he has broken this, so let's look down at how this has affected his game.
Yeah.
I mean, what sort of effects is that?
The argument against a weed, again, I think it's kind of silly, but the argument against weed is similar to the argument against steroids in training. So people say, well, if you're not on steroids during the fight, you can do as much steroids, it's not going to make you better. That's kind of bullshit, because the steroids will mean that you can train longer, you can get that technique. It's still technique that you're nailing, but it's drugs that have enhanced that.
Yeah.
The argument could be that if you're training Brazilian jiu-jitsu, you can progress greater on weed.
Like, and it's just fucking so, like, that's such a marginal argument.
Again, I don't know. It's the reason Eddie Bravo and the Gracies had great fallings out, because Eddie Bravo and Joe Rogan, all these were like, smoke some weed before practice. It makes it all compute better. It goes in better. It's part of the development.
So that's intelligence wise, opposed to physicality wise, which is I think it's a different argument.
Again, it's tough because again, if it's
making you smarter.
Something interesting.
Once weed, it makes you smarter in a fight. Not it makes you physically better.
Something interesting that, again, Dr. Carl Hart said in that one about drugs, when they talked about performance enhancing drugs briefly, was saying he feels that, I don't know, it's all... He doesn't think anything should be banned, but everything should be available to everyone. So you've got these choices. Because he was saying, the fact is, if you're GSP and you've got one of the highest calibre gyms in the world, all sorts of equipment, all sorts of nutrition advice, and you're fighting Dan Hardy, who's coming from the UK and hasn't got all these millions and hasn't got as much of a camp, you've got an advantage. You've got an unfair advantage that he can't have. He can't do all the things that you're doing. It's not available to him. And the argument against performance enhancing drugs is you being able to do something that the opponent can't do. Whereas if everything is available to everyone, and again, I don't know where I fall on that. It's kind of, it gets dangerous because it's for the protection of the fighters. But yeah, a 5-year ban for weed is clearly ridiculous, right? Insane. Everyone in agreement? It's absolutely mental.
It's bollocks. Yeah.
And the UFC would be a much duller place without Nick Diaz.
Yeah.
Well, actually, no. We shouldn't. You can't make that ruling on how much fun someone is. But you can't.
A bit.
You can't.
No, but again, equally, it's exactly the same thing, though, because that fun is essentially why he's got a 5-year ban. It's his entertainment. It's his attitude. He's not got a 5-year ban for doing drugs.
I think you have to break that down a lot more. But no,
again, it's clearly not like people have been popped for weed before and got a 2-month ban, a 3-month ban, a 6-month ban. So he didn't get that ban because of the drugs. He got that ban because of his attitude.
Mm.
His attitude is what we're referring to as he's a lot of fun. So again, I agree that you can't be extra lenient on him because he's fun, but equally you can't be harsher on him because what we perceive as fun, a commission perceives as disrespect or so on and so forth. We're going to wrap this up, and then we're going to have to do one more. Getting really late. It's almost midnight. I mean, have you guys got work in the morning? Yes. Sorry about that. We'll wrap this one up. Just two quick things, because then we've just got October and November, and we can fit that into one. Sure. Maybe the next one will be a short one, but just quickly on September, a Volkswagen. You hear about all that shit?
With the
diesel cheap. Fucking disgusting. Oh my
God, that's crazy.
So there's emission tests and to test how much you're polluting, and Volkswagen were completely rigging that to get past these tests and then putting out cars that were fucking kill it. How fucked up is that? As a massive country.
It's fucked up, but that's rife. But the crazy thing is there's so many companies doing that all the time.
But
so yeah,
I know it's trivial, but that's proper supervillain shit. That you're going, we're going to do this thing that's going to destroy the world more. Let's hide it. You know, it's genuinely, there's nothing other than that. Obviously, there's profit or whatever, but and they're not a small company. There's not a few Volkswagens out there. There's a lot. And I just found that absolutely unimaginable.
Even still, Volkswagen is kind of small fry compared to the amount of banking organisations that are doing that on such a bigger level to us every day. So badly that we commonly accept that as, as I said earlier, what the first episode, as religion. Well, that's just how things are. That's just how we go about our day. Not beyond Volkswagen, where we go, fucking liar.
Yeah.
There's people doing that on such a bigger scale. Yeah, so I'm not saying that's Volkswagen, what they were doing was wrong. I'm just saying, if you found what Volkswagen did wrong, there are so many other companies out there.
There's a lot. Again, that's a tough one, because it's like, it's not that kind of encourage you to ignore or excuse when again there's a lot going on. The last thing for this month I want to talk about,
what's the best lie you've ever told?
The best lie I've ever told.
God, I've got so many to go through.
I called into work once, right?
I know one of your best lies.
I was working in HMV and my girlfriend at the time was about to leave for uni, so I didn't want to go in, so I called into work and said, mate, like, I was on my mobile, like, this is embarrassing, but I've got stuck in my loft. I've gone up in my loft and the loft hatch has gone down, and it's one that closes on the outside. Yeah. The loft hatch has gone down and I'm stuck in my loft, and they're like, what? And I'm like, I'm just stuck in my loft. I was like, I don't even know when my mum's coming back. I've rung her phone but she's not answering, she's in meetings. Like, I might be in at some point but she's just not come back. And he was like, well, Sarah lives in Stamford, She can come by and let you out. I was like, that'd be amazing. If she can get in the front door, you know, without a key, obviously. If she can get in, then that'd save my life. Because I don't know where I'm going to piss.
Yeah.
I don't know what I'm going to do. So I was really... And because it was such a ridiculous lie, they completely went for it. I just had a nice day with the missus.
That's nice.
Saw her off to Bristol.
Oh, man, we've done some fantastic ones. What other ones that he's really... My favourite lie that you pulled on me was I was having a load of trouble in my physics class. This must have been the third time out I was trying to do physics, and I was segregated. No, you know, I was getting into trouble, and Pip walks into the classroom, and he's like, "Is Chris Glasson in here?"
I read it off a bit of paper. "Is there Chris Glasson?"
And I looked around, I was obviously bored out my brains, and Pip walks in with a few other of our old accomplices. He's like, yeah, he's got a phone call.
I said he's got a phone call at reception urgently. At
reception.
And then you came out and then...
Walked out.
I went back and said, I've got to go, I can't explain. And we went and got drunk or stoned or something, wasn't it?
Probably both.
I nicked that off my mate Rick. Ricky Claydon, as in media, and literally, I mean, he just had these big windows, and I'm sat there just kind of bored, and Rick just walked past and had a real kind of, he glanced and then went, kind of, he leant back again, so he'd gone out of the window frame, then leant back and went, So at least mine was planned, and then he just went, just opened the door and walked in, and I'm like, what the fuck is he doing? He's just walked in my class, and he was just off the cuff, just went, is there a David Meads? Obviously, he didn't say Scroobius Pip. That would have been weird to my teacher.
You didn't even
is
there a David know Meads? What that was back then.
Exactly that. And we just went and got drunk. And the worst part for that, the guilt for that, was for months after that, my teacher was like, look, if you need extra time, things like that. And I was like, because they thought something bad happened.
For me, my fallout was there was a while the, what are they called? What are the top boys at school called? The bosses.
The bosses, the headmasters. The preachers,
headmasters, those guys.
How many bosses?
I don't know. He had my timetable up on his wall, like in the headmaster's room. Headmaster, right?
Yeah.
He had my timetable up in the wall just to make sure that there weren't kids like him getting me out.
To keep an eye on you. I threw a kid down a flight of stairs once at school.
It's really sorry, why am I laughing about that? That's not cool.
No, it's because he took the piss out of my stutter while stood at the top of the stairs. just do it somewhere else. And he took the piss out of my stutter, and I said, all right, you're going down there.
You only pushed him.
Yeah.
It wasn't his fault.
It's gravity that did the rest.
It's his fault that you start.
It's weird you say about lies and stairs.
Speaking of lies and stairs,
my cousin was telling me about a bloke he grew up with, and he was his favourite liar. He was called Gapper Lee, which is an amazing name for a liar. And
Stabber Lee.
He lays claim to have jumped at the windows of the top floor of Tilby Flats.
Wow.
And used a tea towel as a parachute.
Why is that guy not in here now, man? We need to hang out with him.
Also also told his mates that he could fit in a teapot.
Seriously?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
That's beautiful.
I've told you. Sorry, we're going to throw some lies in the mix. I told you about the shit with Buckley and the conversation we had about.
Which one was it? So you've done nights with James Buckley in the past, or DJ, like you were his DJ partner.
And
James Buckley from In Between Us.
Yeah.
So we're driving the Hull or somewhere like that. And it was Damon or Ian, the writers, the in-betweeners, phoned up James and said, look, we're writing whatever it was, second series or whatever it was at the time. Need to think of some liars for your character.
Yeah.
And so it was like, okay. So he sort of put the phone down and we've got another sort of 3-4 hours going up the M1. And he was like, do you know any sort of good liars? And I said, yeah, I do, funnily enough. I said, my mate Justin's got a pal who's come up with some of the greatest lies ever. But I think the key to a good liar is you believe it.
Yeah.
And you also have that thing that everyone else believes your lies, which is key. And I always play along with a liar because I can't want to hear it. But he come out with a stack of lies, and only one made the in-betweeners. The one that made the in-betweeners was a play on when Dave said he went to Safari Park with his dad. a moose was bogging him out. So his dad turned around and laid it out.
Brilliant, brilliant.
Anyway, wow.
They've got weak chins.
But he also laid claim to have not been able to come down the pub one night because he'd got in from the gym and was so ripped he got stuck in his bath.
There's no way anyone said that.
But the creme was when he come down the pub, told everyone that he was a bit down, his budgie had died.
Right.
How did his budgie die? Well, a couple of weeks ago, my budgie had broke its leg and my dad made a splint for it out of a Swan Vesta. A week later, he'd struck it on the sandpaper at the bottom of the page and he had burned to death.
There's no way!
It's the need... It's the social peacock need to have a good story. I always remember... my brother tells this all the time. He was at a party, a house party in South London, I think it was once, and there was a lad there who was on his own, and a few people coming around, and this one lad, and he'd been a bit quiet, and then he got talking to him, and it turns out he'd been on Funhouse, like with Pat Sharp and the twins.
Yeah.
And he talks to everyone, and he's like, he becomes the best dude in the party, because if you've got a good story, you're the best dude in the fucking party. So he's telling them the whole time about how they didn't win the main prize, but they got to go on this and all this and all this. And then the night goes on, and he's like the toast of the town. And just as he's leaving, and my brother's near the door, and he just walks past him and just whispers to my brother, just goes, "Here, I made all that up about Funhouse and a bit," and then we're going, I just leave. And I love that little punchline of like, I'm going to give this punchline to one person and then leave. Again, I'm just telling more stories now, but always reminds me of my Uncle John. Who is great, is a good uncle. And I like the kind of comedy where it's not for the mass audience, it's just for one or two.
Yeah, totally.
We had this Christmas do around my Uncle Pat's, and someone did the stinkiest fart in the world ever. And John, it was him, he fessed up. And it became this big joke, and it was all this, as families are at Christmas when you've had a few drinks, this big joke going on and on and on. And then it just died down, and me and my brother were just at the end, and John just... I leant over to his wife, Denise, and went, "It's the last time I'm covering for you." And it just killed us, because it was like, no, she was like, "Shut up, that wasn't it." It wasn't for the whole, it didn't make a big deal of it. It's, like, it's the last time I'm covering for you. I mean, we do need to wrap this one up and start the last one, or we're going to be all night. But just quickly on this last one, we talked about it a little bit earlier, the when do you know you're the bad guys or the good guys. In September, obviously we have bombed, us in America have bombed Syria and have been involved in all this kind of, or have been involved in the Middle East a lot.
Mm-hmm.
September was when Russia got involved and was fighting the same people that we were fighting. And I find that an incredibly tough time to think that you're the good guys when you've got your arm round Vladimir Putin. And it was interesting seeing the political shuffling in general, because we've been against Putin for a while and fighting a lot of his regimes and actions. So, yeah. How's that for feeling the good guys?
You're never
going to
be a good guy if you're dropping bombs on people.
No. It's a tough one, isn't it? Good point.
Sorry.
Good point, well made. Let's wrap it up there and move on to the next one. No, unless you do have anything to add. It's weird, because Putin for so long has become this almost Bond villain, just mythical, that there's just pictures of him riding horses with his shirt off and catching fish live and just raw with his hands, and then suddenly this evil villain is like, you know what, you guys are right, you know, we need to go and sort them guys out, and it's like, whoa, this is some shit.
I mean,
right here.
Like, even look at the politics now, we're not sort of fighting the same fight, although we are, and it's all getting confusing. Yeah. Obama's trying to straighten it out, but that's December. Let's roll back 2 months, and we were in a slightly different climate, and we were in a climate where we've been hating on Russia for so fucking long, but that's not that depends on the media channels. Do you watch any media channels that aren't English? And then have you ever watched any media channels where Russian is translated into English?
Yeah.
And sometimes watch the things that Putin's saying.
Well, Russia's
sometimes
the most
I watch them
nuts.
And I go, that's not what the English channels are saying, what you're saying.
It's
and whether that's being lost in translation.
It's amazing the amount of hotels in Russia that have, like, pictures of Putin on topless on a horse and wrestling a snake. And it's just stupid, like, barbaric, like, old age shit like that, that they're still, he's still living under that cloak of propaganda, like within their own, yeah, in their own country. It's kind of a mess. But, yeah, let's wrap this up,
okay,
have a couple more drinks, and then do the last one. So there's going to be five.
Okay, five.
We thought there might be two
Jesus
or three.
Christ.
There's going to be five.
It's 1 a.m.
I'll see you,
12 a.m.
I'll see you all next
when
week.
You had,
what?
When you were doing your horse training,
yeah,
did you have your shirt on?
I did have my shirt on.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's, you not can't how have I that picture it, though.
No,
I had
no,
a sword as well, mate. I had a sword tucked in.
You can't hold a shirt and ride a sword.
Hold a shirt and ride a sword. No, I can't, Chris. I cannot hold a shirt and ride a sword. I've never been able to do that.
Pussy!
So, yeah, on that bombshell, see you all next week, where we'll be slightly more drunk and we will finish up and then have a bit of a look forward to next year.
You've been listening to Scroobius Pip's Discretion Pieces.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.